Chapter 9. Rouge. Rouge looked at the filthy figure lying at her feet and sighed. She hopped down from the tree branch where she had been sitting for the last few minutes, watching Aspen haul himself up out of a hole in the ground that had to be at least 20 feet deep. Reaching down, she extended a hand, grasping his when he reached up and pulling him to his feet. For once, she could actually see most of his face, since his hat had apparently come off somewhere during his what? Capture? Imprisonment? What the heck was going on here? She crossed her arms and glared at him, wishing that tapping her foot would have had any result, besides making a squelchy sound which would probably be covered up by the near-constant rolls of thunder. If any situation called for crossed arms and foot tapping, this was it. The tall man reached up and pushed his sopping wet hair back out of his face. It was getting pretty long now, and he looked like a sexy lady in one of those perfume ads when she came up out of the ocean. Except dirtier. And more tired. And more shamefaced. Which was good, because he should be. Silas, who had found Rouge almost as soon as she started flying, heading back toward the inn for help, was also glaring at Aspen. Hazel eyes and golden ones waited for an explanation that didn't suck. Unfortunately, they were going to have to wait a little longer because just as Aspen opened his mouth, the door behind him, which he had brilliantly been using to prop himself up, fell open. He stumbled backwards, landing on his butt, and then promptly did the only smart thing that she knew of he'd done since she'd last seen him. He rolled. A large blade dropped from above the door, crunching into the wooden floor where Aspen had landed. It dug a deep groove into the wood, joining other, similar indentations, as well as some ominous dark stains. Which might just have been from water seeping under the door. But she doubted it. You have found blade trap, LV4. Oh my gosh, no kidding, she growled, swiping away the notification even as she leapt through the door, tucking and rolling in the air so she landed on her feet next to Aspen. Behind them, the door slammed shut. A low groan rattled through the house, which shuddered as a clap of thunder boomed nearby, and lightning blazed through the dirty cracked windows, lighting the room. She screeched and threw herself backwards, nearly knocking Aspen, who had just pulled himself back to his feet, back onto his rear. Vividly exposed by the brilliant flash was a horror show of a room. Before them were three bodies impaled on spikes, faces contorted in agony, all in varying stages of decomposition. Scattered on the floor around them were glittering blades, too many to count, ranging from scalpels to butter knives, all liberally doused in black viscous fluid. Spiked chains dangled from shackles on the extremities of each body, and what looked like giant fish hooks pulled their partially torn flesh at angles flesh was never meant to go. Rouge backed up, gorge rising as she stared at the scene. Her dark vision, which to be honest was one of the main reasons she'd selected Dark Elf as one of her races, kept flicking on and off as the lightning sparked, taking the already revolting picture to a whole new level of horror. Her breath caught in her throat, and she barely noticed when Aspen began moving toward the bodies with slow, deliberate steps. Slowly he crouched, just out of reach of the things on the posts, and reached down to touch the pool of gore. He lifted his finger to his eye, waited for a flash of lightning, then paused. A moment later, the finger was in his mouth, and if she could have thrown up, she totally, 100%, without a doubt, would have. Aspen, she choked, what? The tall farmer stood, reaching up habitually to shove his hat back from his forehead, and stopping when his fingers touched his wet mud-caked hair. With a sigh, he reached down and pulled his barely still a hat out of his belt and tugged it onto his head, where it drooped, almost more liquid than solid after all the abuse and the rain. Aspen put his hands on his hips and stared down the long entryway, past the bodies, and up the long split stairs that climbed on each side of the room. Whoever is up there, come down. These things aren't even anatomically correct. He reached over and tugged an arm off the closest body, and when he waggled it, she could see that it only had four fingers and three were made of what looked like sausages, while the other one looked like a carrot, and your fake blood smells like ketchup. She sniffed. Yep, that's why that vinegary smell was so familiar. She had a bad feeling she'd be eating her hot dogs plain for a while, though. One of the sausages came loose from the hand and fell to plop in the pool of ketchup, and she gulped. Yeah, no hot dogs for a while either. There was a long silence, and then, as the rain sound slowly began to fade, the storm moving away, a rather tentative, ooh, came echoing through the hall. Unenthusiastic chain rattling followed a moment later. Aspen crossed his arms and tapped his foot. That was so not right. If anyone was doing that, it was her. She crossed her own arms and tapped her foot but stopped, realizing that now she just looked silly. She looked at Aspen. "Life sense?" she asked via party chat. "Yep. At least a dozen people, but some of them are touching each other, and it's hard to get any details. Most of them feel young though. They're in the dining hall. That's the big room in the middle up there." He returned. Silas perked up. "I'll go check." Aspen spun, reaching out, but it was too late. Silas was flapping away, and Rouge was right behind her. "Watch for traps!" Aspen yelled after them. But Silas was already at the second level, and Rouge didn't bother with the stairs, which were probably trapped. Duh. She headed straight for one of the columns holding up the second-story overhang thing, and clambered up it as easily as if she'd had sticky toes. The fancy carvings made for excellent grips. When she reached the top, she flipped herself easily up, landing in a squat on the railing, her mombelet in one hand and the other lightly touching the wood to help keep her balance. She motioned toward the door in front of her, flicking a look back at Aspen, then realized that the lightning was now little more than a dim remnant, and his human eyes couldn't see her in the darkness. "The one right in front of me?" she asked. "If you go straight up, yes. It's the only one with a knocker. It's ridiculous to have a knocker inside the house, but I never got around to taking it down, and—" She cut off his excuses for his terrible interior decorating sense. "I'm going in." A small bump on her shoulder made her start, until she realized it was her little friend coming in for a landing. "Me too," Silas squeaked. Drawing in a deep breath and desperately hoping that whoever was in there didn't have a real horror show ready for her, she leapt from the railing. Her feet impacted the door with a loud thud and she flipped backwards again, landing on the floor a few feet back. Immediately she dodged left, then took another step backwards, but nothing happened. A quavering voice came from the other side of the door. "GGG, go away. I'll CCCC cut you up. Go back to your boss and tell him we ain't JJJ oinin' you." She paused, staring at the door, which was now slightly splintered from her blow. She was fairly certain that one more good hit would take it down, and two would certainly do the job, but she wasn't quite ready to commit to that level of violence yet. "Did you hear that?" "Yes," Aspen responded quietly. "This area was safe from the gangs when I lived here. I imagine that after I was gone, well, there was probably a bit of contention regarding who would control it. It sounds as if some of those affected may have moved in and created their own safe place. Honestly, I have no problem leaving them to it, but there are a few things I need to do here first." He raised his voice, using his lighter accent, probably so that the people listening could actually understand him. His Rube from the country accent was thick. "We're not from the gangs. We've no interest in recruiting you. You said I know the lady what lived here. I just want to look around and then we'll leave." She appreciated the "we," even though he hadn't actually checked with her. She fully intended to search the place top to bottom for anything she could, acquire. It wasn't even stealing, really, since she had the owner's permission. She was close enough now that she could hear the muffled chatter of multiple voices from the room ahead. She half tuned it out as she focused on the area nearby. Small areas of wall on each side of the door began to glow a soft and ominous red in her vision. "You have discovered Poison Dart Trap X4, LV2. Silently, watching for any further signs of traps in the floor or ceiling, she padded over to the first trap. With a disarm trap skill level of 7, a level 2 dart trap took only an instant to release, and she tucked the little device into her inventory. The other three were disposed of just as easily, and just as she put away the last one, she heard a clamor from inside the room. Even more voices were talking at once, but now they sounded relieved rather than frightened. "Something just changed," she sent. "Can you tell what?" She pulled back, readying her mombelet again. "Someone else just came up the servant stairs. I don't know why I didn't notice her before. An adult female, young but older than the others." "Everyone else got—" Aspen hesitated, brighter. When she entered, a young voice filtered through the door. Plum, we can. Another came a moment later, slightly deeper but still childish. No way, Plum, there's just two. Time to shake things up a little. She slid forward, examining the heavy lock on the door. Who puts a lock on a dining hall? She asked slightly peevishly as she worked at it with her lockpicks. It was a heavy old thing, and it was hard to clear the tumblers quietly. Aspen sighed. The same people who put a knocker on one? The last pin clicked over, the sound lost in the pandemonium that now raged on the other side of the door. Silas, you ready? A nearly silent squeak was her answer, and she clasped the handle of the door, opening it and pushing inside the room in an instant. Spinning, she danced left, narrowly avoiding the not entirely clumsy slash of the tall boy standing on the other side. His freckled face twisted into an angry snarl, and he leapt toward her, blade overextended. With a twist, she caught the knife in the rear-facing blade of her own weapon, pulling it from his hand with a deft movement that left the jagged knife momentarily tumbling through the air. With a grin, she caught it in her offhand, brandishing it. Dual knife-wielding was so cool. Yielding to temptation, Rouge adroitly flipped both weapons around in her hands, spinning the hilts so they seemed to dance in her palms. The eyes of the 13 children facing her widened, and one little one, missing her top two front teeth and one on the bottom, grinned admiringly, little dimples dancing in her cheeks. Rouge nearly dropped both blades as she recognized the little girl. Matilda, she gasped. Big brown eyes widened, and the girl's mouth dropped open. An instant later, the child had crossed the distance, throwing her arms around Rouge's waist. Rouge. They stole my doll again. Quest, well, hello Dolly 2 available. Matilda's precious doll has been stolen again. Also, she's a homeless orphan. Maybe help with that. Success. Variable depending on whether you are able to retrieve the doll and how much assistance you can give. Failure. Neither return the doll nor improve Matilda's circumstances. Except, yes, no? Rouge stared around helplessly, patting the sobbing little girl on the back as a dozen pairs of eyes stared back. Does this mean no fighting? Silas asked, because I'm not sure I can bite kids. Rouge stared down at the curly-haired moppet for whom she had once done a quest. The girl's father, a merchant, had been away on a sea voyage, and some heartless thief, not her, had stolen the doll he had left for his daughter. The toy was an item called a doll of contentment, and was ranked as rare, since it had a special effect of making anyone who held it feel happier. An unscrupulous noble, a collector of rare and unusual artifacts, had placed the dolly on a pedestal in a display room, and Rouge had retrieved it for the child who loved it. The elf thief knelt, brushing the wild tangles back from the little face, which was noticeably thinner than when she'd last seen it. Big tears continued to course down the formerly chubby cheeks, and the girl scrubbed at her reddening eyes with dirty, scratched little fists. Rouge looked up fiercely, staring around the circle of dumbfounded faces, until her gaze settled on the one adult in the group. The woman was around Bridget's age, in her early to mid-20s, and her mouth was set in a fierce, uncompromising line. She held a knife, which had been aimed at Rouge's heart, until the events of the last few seconds had made her drop her guard. Now she raised it again, dark brown eyes determined under flat black brows. The two stared at each other accusingly, neither quite ready to either attack or begin talking. Then from behind her, Rouge heard Aspen rasp out, "Plum?" The young woman dropped her knife, both hands flying to her mouth. Her eyes welled with tears, much as Matilda's had upon seeing Rouge. "Oh," she gasped. "My lord." She sank into a deep, awkward curtsy, nearly toppling as she tried to spread a skirt that didn't exist, since her legs were covered in ragged brown leather trousers. Rouge spun, staring at the tall figure standing in the doorway. Aspen sighed, pulling the pathetic remnants of his hat off his head and attempting to brush mud and debris from his hair. A faint flush rose in his cheeks, and he pulled at his rough linen shirt and plain leather vest. "Well," he muttered, "so much for anonymity." The woman, Plum, stepped forward, face so white that Rouge was afraid she'd faint. "My lord," they said you were dead. They sent us away, and the Duke claimed the estate. He said you owed back taxes, so. But then the gangs came back, and no one wanted to chance. They said you'd performed evil magic here, and it was cursed. Then they said there were ghosts, and then? Then the hospital orphanage closed, and the children had nowhere to go, And throughout this broken explanation, Aspen's face had become progressively more thunderous, until by the end Rouge thought she'd never seen anyone so furious. They closed the hospital? He ground out, deep voice dangerously calm. Plum gulped, stepping back. Without Milady and without funding, they had no choice. The tall man's fist struck out, smashing into the open door beside him. The thick slab of wood, as though deciding that enough was enough, simply shattered into dust and drifted to the floor. Rouge felt her eyes grow wide. She'd known Aspen was strong and that he had only grown stronger since she met him, but that she wasn't sure Mott could have hit that hard with a single unarmed blow. I left, he bit out, a very large deposit in the bank marked for the hospital. It should have lasted for decades, by which time they could have invested it or figured out another income source. Rouge looked back and forth between the two, seeing Plum's throat move as she swallowed hard. They said there were inconsistencies and taxes. My lord. The woman was barely whispering. The tall man pressed his hand over his eyes, clearly struggling against a furious response. Finally he dropped his hand, revealing eyes that slowly opened, icy topaz shards in his lean face, for once bereft of its battered straw camouflage. He breathed out, shoulders relaxing slightly. I'm sorry. Plum, I'm sorry. Please, he waved his hand around at the gathered children, who were now huddled in a frightened mass, except for Matilda, who was hiding behind Rouge, little hands fisted in the fabric of her shirt, continue. Who are these children, and how is it that you're here? Plum took one step forward and then emboldened another and another, until she stood only a few feet before Aspen. My lord, she said softly, I'm so sorry. About Lark? His face froze, expressionless and painfully blank. Thank you. Now, about the children? For the first time since Rouge had met him, she could see a nobleman in her friend. His air of authority and absolute belief that he would be answered were undeniable. Plum bobbed another sketchy curtsy and cleared her throat hoarsely. That, she swallowed hard. After you left, they turned us out. Said we'd have to find other positions, of course. Grandpa and I. Since you paid us so well as room and board, we'd been able to save some. We bought a little house near the hospital, and we volunteered at the orphanage there. We knew, she gulped, and her dark eyes shone with suspicious moisture, Milady would want it to stay open and thought we'd help keep costs down. It was fun, doing things because we wanted to, not because we had to. She looked around at the once grand dining room, rife with carved friezes covered in gold leaf, walls covered in sadly water-stained red satin. They sold the place. Even auctioned it off, but no one could stay here. There was talk of tearing it down, but then the gang started fighting over the unclaimed territory, and it was just abandoned. Grandpa and I, she grinned a little, we dug the first pit and bought a few magic tricks. Things like flashing lights and spooky sounds that children use to frighten each other. We couldn't bear to see anyone else living here, you see. Grandpa even started taking care of some of the gardens again. Then one day I went to work and the children were just standing in the street, their little bundles at their feet. The sign on the door said the hospital was now privately owned and wouldn't accept anyone who couldn't pay any more. There were guards. She stammered to an angry halt, black brows drawing down over her eyes again. So I brought the children here. We found homes for a few of the littlest and tracked down distant relatives for others. But the gangs were watching them as the healthy ones went out to earn money, and the recruiters started in on them, telling them they'd better pick a side. Plum drew in a breath. That's when we dug the pit deeper, Grandpa placed the traps, and we set up the display downstairs. Her face was pale but determined. We made it look like something uncanny was here, killing people. A few children played dead, and then we killed a few gang members. We made it, she turned faintly green, look like something tortured them and ate parts of them. After that, they left us alone. We've been growing food in Milady's gardens, and Grandpa goes out into the northern forest, hunting and fishing. That's where he is now. The woman trailed off, clearing her throat awkwardly. We really did, she said quietly, believe you were dead. Aspen stepped forward slowly, and Rouge could see the children surrounding them tense up, as though preparing to defend their heroine. The tall man raised his hand and set it gently on Plum's black hair. You did well, he said softly. Birdie would be proud. Plum caught her breath in a muffled sob and launched herself into Aspen's arms, crying in terrible racking sobs born of a combination of grief and relief that was heartbreaking to watch. Half an hour later, Aspen and Rouge were sitting in matching red satin-covered dining chairs, watching as Plum carefully tucked each of her nestlings into bed. Blankets covered the floor in the rear of the room, and thick, fluffy feather pillows created comfortable sleeping arrangements. The woman had explained that this was the only room on the second floor with no windows to show light, enough room for everyone, and two exits. "We didn't go up to the third floor, of course, my lord," she had said, glancing meaningfully at Aspen, who had nodded approval. Rouge propped her feet up on the heavy dining room table, which apparently served as both a place to eat and a school desk, judging by the neat stack of beginner's books at the other end of the table. She was just relaxing back into her chair, luxuriating in the fact that Mont wasn't there to tell her to get her feet off the table, when she caught Aspen's eye. The eyebrow went up, and his pale topaz gaze flicked from her feet to the table, one corner of his mouth quirking up to match the eyebrow. Sighing, she put her feet down. A slightly petulant voice intruded into her mind, as she was trying to decide what question she wanted to ask first. "Can't I go say hello to Plum yet? She was my second favorite person after Birdie, you know." The twitch at the corner of Aspen's mouth became that familiar half-smile. "I didn't," he replied thoughtfully. "I thought I was your second favorite person." Silas practically snickered. "You were too stuck up. You never wanted to play." "Mom," the bat hesitated and then continued more quietly, "Mom said you were busy and worried about really important things, and I shouldn't bother you." Rouge felt her own eyes tear up at the genuine sorrow in her little friend's mental voice, and she reached up to scrooch between the fuzzy ears. Aspen, who had also raised his hand as if to reach for the bat, put it back down and sighed defeatedly. "I wish I had done things differently, but your mother was right. I'm glad you and Birdie and Plum could play together, and you can go see her once she's done. We don't want to frighten the children, and remember that Plum can't hear you." "So," the elf girl cleared her throat, though she didn't stop petting Silas. "Who is Plum exactly? It sounds like she works here, but ah, that hug." She felt her cheeks heat, as she remembered some of the things she'd thought when the other woman flung herself at Aspen. Aspen's eyes, now warm honey instead of icy crystal, creased with his smile, as if he could read her mind and was amused. "She's the same age as Birdie. Her parents were our head chef and the chief ostler. Her grandfather was the head gardener and gamekeeper. She and my daughter Lark, being the only children in a place considered, at best, unlucky, and thus shunned by the neighborhood children, played together often. Lark was the thinker, and Plum was the doer. Between them, they got into a great deal of mischief. Plum's parents died during the Battle of Bright, when the Lich Lord's forces tunneled beneath our walls, and she and Tomas were the only two servants who stayed with us. Plum was our chef, and took care of Lark's chickens and our last two horses, who were too old to be requisitioned by the military." He sighed softly, shaking his head. "When they were little, they'd call both me and Plum's father Daddy, as if we were interchangeable. Plum's mother was Mama, and Tomas was Grampy." His expression darkened as his eyes followed the young woman's figure as she moved around, dimming lamps and tucking small bodies under blankets. "I left both Tomas and Plum healthy investment accounts, with instructions that they should have the gamekeeper's cottage where Tomas lived, and that the funds would be used to provide for their needs for the rest of their lives." Rouge grimaced. "Sounds like somebody isn't good at following instructions." Aspen leaned forward, steepling his fingers under his nose, as the soft light of the single remaining glowstone glinted in his eyes. "Yes," he said simply, "it does." Rouge shivered.